Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday, what a day. Rock and roll week with you.
That's right. We're right here at Sharp Fastest Gallery. Must be 4:08 in the evening, and it is time for Meet Me at the Diner. Today we have another political candidate. Amazing! We have had quite a group of candidates, and this afternoon we have Riley Harvell, who is running for state senate. That's right. He is here with us today. He lives in Belton, South Carolina. He's a young guy, let me tell you. He's a young guy. He's also a Marine right now. He's been over in Iraq, but he's back here in the U.S. of A. He's married, and he has two children. So welcome to the show today, Riley.
I needed to show up. You did a pretty good introduction there.
Well, that's great. So now you're young. You're 24, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
That's right. So, and, you know, people that have seen your picture might wonder, your background, your nationality.
I'm South Korean. I was adopted from South Korea when I was born. Both my parents are white people, I guess. And I didn't realize I wasn't until I was probably 10, 13 years old. So
You were at the swimming pool?
That's right. I was at the swimming pool, and everybody else was putting on sunscreen, and I didn't get any. So I asked why, and they said it was because I was from Korea.
That's how you found out,
That's
huh?
That's how I found out. Nobody
else bothered
to tell me. Did
it surprise you?
I was a little bit surprised. I didn't really know where Korea was, but I found out pretty fast. So.
They didn't have a stork in your yard.
No.
All right. Well, you are here today. You, as I said, you are running for the state senate. And, you have been involved in politics, I guess, even though you're only 24, for many years.
I say over a decade. It's hard to pinpoint that far back where it was. I was in middle school, that's for sure. And my father was on town council when he was 20, 21, and got out of politics when me and my brother came along. And he had he's a photographer. He had his photography studio right by our house, and there wasn't much foot traffic through there, just one or two brides a week. But county council decided they were going to rezone our property to be strictly commercial. And, you know, being a fairly political person, he wasn't involved, but he kept up with it. He went to a county council meeting and told him the situation. And I think two of the council members fell asleep, and the rest of them weren't paying him any attention, and they went ahead and zoned it residential anyways. And he ended up closing his photography studio. It was right about that time where he could get away with doing it all online. But, you know, that made him mad. And so he kept going back to county council and drugged me with him. And so we worked for years, in fact, getting new council members elected and really turning over the Anderson County Council to be a government that really does work for the people, I believe. So.
Now, one might wonder why someone as young as you would want to go for state senate office. I mean, you haven't had any other political office, have you?
No, no, I've not.
And why did you decide to make that big step?
You know, I've been asked this question a lot along the campaign trail, and it's a good question, and I really do enjoy answering it, because a lot of people think that in my generation's the impatient generation, and, you know, we just can't wait to work our way up through the school boards and county council all the way to wherever the end of the career, you know, leads you to. But in my case, it's almost the opposite. I'm so involved. And I have followed politics for so long that I looked at the state and I looked at where we were headed, and I asked myself where can I make the biggest difference. Like I said, the county council is doing a good job up in Anderson County. My council member is one of the original council members that really helped shift the council from being a fiscally liberal to a fiscally conservative government.
Mm-hmm.
And so my county council was in pretty good shape. The House of Representatives is passing significant reforms every year that stall in the South Carolina Senate. And, you know, when I look at the direction that I think our state needs to go, I think that the House has got it pretty right. You know, they're taking us in the right direction. But the Senate, on the other hand, the votes that are being made in the Senate are killing significant reforms. They're passing large budgets. Kevin
we're talking
Bryan.
About we're talking about the state
the
here
state
now.
The state Senate, yes.
Okay, because you know, we seem to have a problem in the federal government with the Senate.
Well, yes, we do. I think the Senate generally the problem. They're more entrenched. They have a bigger district. It's harder to win. And they serve for a lot longer generally in the Senate than they do in the House. We have a lot more what mm-hmm. I would call career politicians, but when we talk about the, let's say I was on a roll there, and I lost where I was going. But the Senate is where these good reforms die, is where good legislation goes to die, is what I've been told, and what I've witnessed over the years. And so it has nothing to do with me. I mean, if it was my county school board and I was unhappy with my county school board member, I'd be running against him. But when I looked at the direction that I thought our state needed to go, and I looked at this election cycle, the state Senate is where I thought that my vote would make the biggest difference.
So you are running for state Senate. Now, growing up here, you, of course, you have been in the military. You were in the U.S. Marine Corps. In fact, you're still in there.
Yes, ma'am.
And how do you like being in the Marines?
I like it. I was telling you earlier, I like Marines. The Marine Corps is frustrating because the Marine Corps is another arm of government. It's red tape, it's bureaucracy, it's hard to get anything done, it's almost impossible to change anything. And anyone who's ever been in the military will tell you that's how it is with all the branches of service. But there's a lot that, as a sergeant, I can do for my individual Marines to help them, you know, grow up in the system, I guess is the best way to put it, and teach them the ropes and show them, you know, what they need to do in order to be good Marines and in order to survive and make it through the system.
Now, you enlisted when you were a freshman at Clemson.
I was a freshman. I was 18 years old.
At Clemson. What made you decide to go when you were up there at Clemson? I would say probably living the good life.
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I wanted to go to the U.S. Naval Academy. I applied, I got accepted, and the summer before I was going to begin, the DOD sent me a letter that said my eyes were going to... I wear glasses. For those of you who are listening on the radio, I wear glasses, and they're pretty thick glasses. And the DOD disqualified me because of my vision. Didn't know where I was going to go. The debate coach at Clemson University had offered me a scholarship to go there. And I called him up, and he got me in at the last minute, and I registered for classes and showed up all within about a week. And so I was up there, and you know, I'd been wanting to be military my whole life. And that first year at Clemson, I just kind of felt disconnected. I didn't really know where I was going, didn't really have much direction, and called an old recruiter friend of mine and asked him if he wanted to meet his quota for the month. And that summer, I went to Parris Island. So it was kind of a rushed thing, but I don't regret any bit of it, except for maybe having to go to Parris Island. That wasn't the best the best 3 months of my life, but it made
certainly
me a
shows
person.
What people are made of, right?
It sure does. It sure does. And I tell you, it's one of those experiences that you wouldn't do again, but you wouldn't take back, if that makes sense.
Sure. So then you were sent to Iraq?
Yes. My unit mobilized 23 of us in the early part of 2008. We did our pre-deployment training, and we touched ground in August of 2008 and came back in May of 2009.
Was that the hot time over there? Hot, meaning weather hot?
It's
I understand
funny.
It's, yeah.
It's funny because we trained in California, is where they send you to the Mojave Desert to train. And we trained during the hottest part of the year. And when we landed in Iraq, it was really hot. But by October or November, it was cold.
Mm-hmm.
We were on the ground one night. We had taken a convoy up to a FOB, a forward operating base. And, you know, we laid our sleeping bags out on the ground. There weren't any buildings or anything yet. And I woke up the next morning, and there was a foot of snow on top of my sleeping bag. And I was mad. I was like, I'm in the desert. I don't need to be snowed on. I didn't prepare for this. So,
and they didn't tell you this was going to happen.
They didn't tell us it was going to happen. It was 80 degrees when we left, and overnight the temperature dropped, and it was freezing. So we trained during the hottest part of the year, and we went over there during the coldest part of their year. So
I work with the Civil Air Patrol here, and we are sending shoeboxes to the troops over there in Afghanistan. In fact, there's a gentleman from Anderson who is, I don't remember his name right this minute, but his daughter is in, and we are using her as kind of a base to get things outside.
Okay.
And
Is that Anna Schakowsky?
I think so.
Okay, yeah. Yes. She was at the Republican women's meeting over in Anderson the other night.
But she is going to, and we're going to be sending, and we've finally been able to work it out to be able to get boxes over there through Senator Lindsey Graham's office. So we'll be able to send a whole lot more than we were able to send before.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Those boxes are a godsend when you're over there. I mean, you know, you're living off MREs and lukewarm water and a little bit of drink mix and some trail mix goes a long way.
Right, exactly.
You know, even
I've
if M&Ms are melted.
I've heard we've already started putting the word out that they want towelettes to cool off with. Towelettes would be much appreciated, so y'all can bring those right here to Sharp Facets Gallery. I just thought that was a good opportunity to bring this up.
Absolutely. And I tell you, it's something I'm definitely willing to give time away to because, I mean, like I said, those boxes, we got Beanie Babies in a box from a law firm in North Carolina one day, and those Beanie Babies provided endless amusement for a company of Marines. I mean,
That's scary, Riley.
We, like, stuck them in our Kevlars and tied them to our packs and everything, and we were the unit walking around base with Beanie Babies attached to us until the base general told us that that was not appropriate.
Exactly. But you came back in, what, 2009?
Yes.
And let's see, since then you've gotten married, you've started your own business, Salute Strategies. Now, you were a heavy equipment operator.
I was. I worked road grading for a road grading company out of Anderson. That's up north of here, of Greenwood, and it's up north.
We know where Anderson is, Riley.
Well, you know, I drove a long ways. I didn't know how far I'd gone, but... You know, it was a good job. I did it through high school during the summers. I did it through college just to kind of help pay tuition, and I was doing that before I deployed. And I came back to it, and I loved it. If I could make more money doing it, I would have done it for the rest of my life. But you know, it pays the bills, but that's about it. And when I got married and had my kids, I knew that you know it was time for me to go do something that could be a career, not just a job.
So what does your business do? You've had that for what, a little over a year? Is that correct?
Let's see, we started in January of 2011. So
okay,
we're right at a year and a half or so. What I do is I write grant proposals for nonprofit organizations. More or less, it's fundraising from foundations. I do fundraising alone for a couple of organizations, but for the most part, it's all grant writing. I don't write government grants. I just am vehemently opposed to most government grants and the way that government grants are handed out. And so we don't do government grants, but there's a lot of private money out there. What I like about it most is that it's a win-win. You know, foundations are set up by a company or an individual who has a lot of assets, and they get a tax break for having it, but as a result of the tax break, they are required by law to give away 5% or 15%, depending upon how it's set up, of their assets or of their net earnings per year, and they have to give it away. They have to give it away to somebody. And so it's a win-win. They're helping somebody do something, you know, philanthropic.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, they're benefiting from it as well. So I like it. I enjoy it. And I like helping organizations really get off the ground. So.
Okay. All right. Well, we are here with Riley Harvell. We are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, then we'll be back. Hey, if you've got a question for Riley, just give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Monday, happy days. Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday, what a day. Rock and roll with you.
All right, we're right back here at Sharp Passes Gallery. We are talking with Riley Harvell. He would like to be the senator from this area. He is in a runoff primary coming up less than a week now, next Tuesday.
We're getting there.
Are you excited?
I am. I'm very excited to see what people will do when they're given a choice for who's going to represent them in the Senate seat.
Absolutely. So now you live actually, though, in Belton.
I do. Well, we live in Honeypath.
Excuse me, Honeypath.
They're essentially should be the same.
Yeah. That's a pretty small town.
We share high school, so.
Yeah, that's a pretty small town.
They are. They're really nice little towns, and it's where I grew up, and it's where I intend on raising my kids, because it's a good atmosphere where everybody knows everybody, so.
That can be good and that can be bad. You realize that, don't you?
It's generally worse for the kids.
Yes.
I seem to remember when I was little, I couldn't get away with anything.
Exactly.
And now that I'm a parent, I don't want my kids to get away with anything. So I think that's where we're going to stay.
Okay. All right. Well, you've got a lot of, issues to talk about here. One of the ones that I know a lot of people are interested in, actually, too, jobs, of course, are very, very, very important. And as South Carolina moves forward, we have gotten some good, bigger industries into South Carolina. Of course, Boeing, Amazon, BMW, the big expansion with all the tire companies.
Right.
We are going to be the tire capital of the world before long. Riley, what do you think about the employment situation here in South Carolina?
I think that it's a serious problem for the state. And one of the reasons why I'm running, and it all comes back to the jobs, but is that the legislature makes a habit of creating short-term solutions for long-term problems, is how I've started phrasing it. They put a Band-Aid on a gushing chest wound and expect it to fix the problems of our state.
Mm-hmm.
And we're throwing, you know, we're not generating any long-term solutions. And I think that when you talk about Amazon, when you talk about Boeing and BMW, as great as those jobs are, those economic incentives that we offered to those companies to come here increase the tax burden on the small businesses. And so when I'm explaining this to people on the campaign trail, what I say is this: you know, if you own a small business on Main Street, and your tax burden is increased because Boeing or because BMW or up in Anderson, it's first quality tissue, moved to Anderson and was offered incentives by both the state and the county to come there and locate there. State spending and county spending is still going up every year, and we're not increasing our tax burden on the big companies. And so the people that are making up that windfall are the small companies. And so, you know, if you have a small business, when was the last time you hired a new secretary? When was the last time you hired a new mechanic or a new operator, you know, from where I came from?
Mm-hmm.
Small businesses are shrinking. And we're losing jobs by the truckload just going down Main Street. If you have, you know, 20 new jobs that would have been created on a single Main Street, you know, multiply that by the amount of Main Streets in South Carolina, and we haven't created that many jobs. And that's why you see unemployment numbers going up, even though politicians are going around bragging about bringing 500, 1,000, 5,000 jobs to the state.
Well, I think a lot of the jobs, though, in truth, are coming. They're not here yet. Those are jobs that are
promised. And a lot of times, I know that the legislature, the Senate, fixed this, I guess it was last week. But in the past, we've offered incentive deals, and we haven't set benchmarks. And we've said, you know, you're going to bring 5,000 jobs to this state sometime, you know, and that was the promise that was made. And they may have said, you know, in 5 years we'll have this, but there weren't any consequences for if they didn't create.
Amazon
was the big one, because
mm-hmm.
Amazon was the turning point where people really looked at that deal and said, hey, this isn't fair. And, you know, I know the Tea Party groups went down to Columbia and really pushed the legislators hard. And Amazon was the first, one of the first economic incentive deals that we had where benchmarks were set. The consequences are still unclear as to whether or not if they don't make the goals that they set, the promises that they made, you know, what's going to happen and whether or not those deals are going to be revoked.
On the flip side, from a perspective of getting people good jobs, that is providing good income to people that wouldn't have had that then are allowed to go out and spend money. That is the other
right.
side of the that is the other side of the coin.
Right. Oh no. Yeah. And one of the things that I think we have to make sure of is that we don't get lost in the numbers. When a company promises us, you know, 150 new jobs, we need to make sure that those jobs are jobs people are going to want. That those jobs are going to have benefits. Those jobs are going to be full time, not part time jobs.
Sure.
So often we hear of some of these companies coming in here and hiring temp workers, you know, they'll hire a temp worker for 3 months, let them go, hire new temp workers, and call that two jobs they created, you know, in that time frame.
Well, of course, with everything, there is a lot of hocus pocus going on. Absolutely. Well, we are here with Riley Harvell, and we are going to hear South Carolina news when we come back. I hope if you've got a question, if you hear something you like or something you want to find out about, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Coming up, immigration reform, education. Oh, and here's one, South Carolina Dot. Don't you go away.
From trash to treasures along a country road. Do you love classic country? Do you love to hear the old stuff that nobody plays? Well, we do on Saturday mornings, 9:30 to 12. Yes, it's From Trash to Treasures Along a Country Road. You'll be sure to hear songs you haven't heard for ages and remember all the good times you had. So tune in on Saturday mornings to Trash to Treasures Along a Country Road. I'm Ann Eller. I'll be there. How about you? On WCRS 1450 AM, 9:30 to 12, and on the internet at WLMA.net. Check it out on Saturday, 9:30 to 12, only on WCRS 1450 AM. Classic country, from trash to treasures along a country road.
Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday, what a day.
All right, we're right back here at Sharp Fast's Gallery. We are here with Riley Harvell. He is running for the Senate office. He is in a primary coming up this Tuesday. And how's this whole, we just heard your dad on South Carolina Radio News Network. What was your dad talking about there real quick?
He couldn't just let me have my time.
No, he had to interrupt it with South Carolina Radio News.
I guess that came, did that come from somewhere else? I know he was talking with WSPA and
could have been
this afternoon.
Yeah.
But he, being the county party chairman up in Anderson, he was dealing last night until probably 3 a.m., with the Supreme Court ruling that came down yesterday that's going to remove even more candidates from the ballot. One of the biggest points of contention that we had in Anderson County was that the instructions we were given said that you either file a receipt confirming you had filed your statement of economic interest, or you could bring in a paper copy, you know, print it offline after you save it or file it. And we told candidates, bring in either or. You know, bring in both if you want to. It doesn't matter. You just got to have something. And we had five that brought us in a receipt, and we had four that brought us in paper copies. I was the one that brought in both just because I didn't want to take any chances. But and just so everyone knows, we had the clerk of court from Anderson County was filing his paperwork at the same time as me, and he signed all my paperwork instead of, you know, along with my father, just to make sure there weren't any shenanigans being pulled in those county offices. So he's signed all my paperwork. But we had five that were removed from the ballot last night. And
that's very disheartening.
It is. And I'll tell you, in Anderson County, in this Senate district, which is the lower half of Anderson County, out of the 38 precincts there is one precinct in this Senate district where there will be another race on the ballot other than mine. My race will be the only contested race in the other 37 precincts. One
Wow.
in the far corner where Joshua Putnam, state representative, is being challenged by Hamp Johnson, and both of them are only, or Hamp Johnson's only on the ballot because they were in a special election, I guess, last year, and his statement of economic interest still qualified him, basically under the incumbent's exemption for having, you know, filed one last year. So it's all kinds of a mess, and you know, my father's doing his best, I guess, to explain that to the people, because they're going to go to the polls, and it's too late. You know, if anyone's listening, it's too late to take people off the ballot. Computers have been programmed. Mm-hmm. All you're going to see is one of the most undemocratic signs that you're ever going to see in your life, and it's going to hang above the polling place, and it's going to say, if you vote for, up in Anderson, you know, Creed Hash for sheriff, your vote will not be counted. I mean, they're not even going to count the votes. You can vote for the guy all you want to, but your vote's not going to be counted, and that's a shame, you know. And
it is a shame. It is a shame. We've had a little bit of that here, but some areas have been hit very, very hard by this. But We'll be back to you and talk about you here, but that is a statewide issue that is a problem. Now, education. You're very passionate about education. You've been in, I think if I remember reading this, your wife, you have experienced all types of education, from homeschooling to public to private school.
Yes, we have. My wife was homeschooled up until she went to high school, and in high school she went to Bob Jones Academy in Greenville. I was public educated up and through the fifth grade, where I then went to a Montessori school, fifth through eighth, and then went back to a public high school for high school. And I tell you, there's a lot of people that private school's for. I am not one of them. I did not thrive in a private school setting, especially a Montessori setting, where I was just left to do whatever I wanted to do. My reading skills soared through the roof, but my math and science skills didn't go very far because I didn't like them. I fell behind in private school. My brother, on
that's
the other
unusual.
Hand, yeah, it is unusual.
That's unusual.
It is unusual.
Yes.
My brother, on the other hand, really thrived when he was sent to a Montessori school, and that's where he needed him. When my parents couldn't afford it anymore and had to put him back in public schools, you know, he started falling behind, and he struggled his way through high school. And you know, it's just one of those situations. Where
I understand your brother went on to do technical,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. He did some technical schooling, and I mean, now he works at a pizza place over in Honey Path, and. You know, he's younger than me, so he's got a lot ahead of him. He's got some time, and he doesn't have a family.
Oh yeah, all of 24 here. Yeah, he's got some time. But now, as far as the theory of education and where you think we should be on education, where do you think one of the questions, of course, that's been before the Senate and the House down there is whether our standards for education should be coming from the federal government, or should they come from the state government, or should they even come from the local level? What
right.
do you say, Riley?
Well, I mean, the standards should obviously be as localized as they possibly can be. The local government, the local authority.
But we compete on a state, on a nationwide, and actually on a worldwide level.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
However, the standards that we have in public education are ridiculous. I mean, essentially, teachers are being handed a book at the beginning of the year that said, on every day, this is what you're going to teach and how you're going to teach it. One of the things that bothers me the most is when I came back from overseas and went back into Clemson, I thought about becoming a secondary education major. I wanted to teach government in high school. And there's all kinds of scholarships through the state. The Call Me Mr. program over at Clemson, where we put, you know, young adults through college in, mm-hmm. in exchange for service in the public school system. And we're paying to educate teachers. And then they get there, and we don't trust them enough to decide how they're going to teach material in the classroom. That bothers me. You know, if we can't put faith in the teachers that we have to teach the material, then there's absolutely no sense in that. And so, when it comes to education, I believe that we just have to trust the teachers to do what they're trained to do.
But what type of boundaries should they have to teach in?
They should have to teach within what is going to be tested at the end of the year. The high school exit exam is the bar, and you teach that material. I think that
and what if they fail the bar at the end of high school? There's not much going back and starting over here.
You know, teachers don't get paid very much in this state, and that's a shame. But the reality is most teachers aren't teachers for any reason other than they want to teach. You know, they care about the children, they enjoy their jobs, and they're willing to make sacrifices financially in order to have that as a career. And so they're not going to intentionally let children fail. You know, they're not going to not teach children, you know, the material that they need to learn. I think that a lot of it is just empowering the teachers to be able to do their jobs. And, you know, if the state wants to micromanage, especially as a sergeant in the Marine Corps, I've always learned that if the more you try to micromanage, the less creative and the less, you know, ability your Marines are going to develop. And I think the same holds
your Marines are going to develop. Okay.
I think that the teachers are the same way. I mean, honestly, we have to give them the power, turn the reins loose, and stop micromanaging the classroom from a state and federal level. I think that's what's killing South Carolina education. I think that's why we consistently rank so low nationally.
What do you think about all the different school choice, and how should that be paid for? If you are, of course, living in a district, part of your taxes go to pay for public schooling. Where should you be given vouchers if you go to private school choice?
I'm in favor of the bill that I'm thankful Senator O'Dell voted for. I guess it was last week.
Mm-hmm.
School choice, you know, made it to the Senate floor for the first time ever, I believe. was debated, you know, made it out of committee.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's one of the things that I've always believed is that the tax credit is the best way to approach school choice, because it honestly increases the amount of per pupil funding in the classroom. You know, if only one third of what we spend per pupil is given in a tax credit to the parents to go at homeschool or private educator or however they feel their child should best be educated, it's only a third of the per pupil funding. The rest of it stays in the public school system. And so the school's still getting two thirds of the funding for a child who's no longer there, a child they're not having to instruct, you know, and the per pupil funding in the schools is going to go up. And I think that's going to lend a lot of ability in the public school system to increase funding elsewhere.
How about online? What do you think about online for younger children particularly?
I hate to keep going back. My family's been educated every way possible. In fact,
right, yes.
My sister-in-law graduated, I guess, from an online, the Provost Academy is done online. It's a homeschool program, more or less, and they do all of their classes online and through podcast or however the case may be. And she enjoyed it. It was what she needed. It was what...
Personally, I think doing online is kind of hard to do. You know, it's hard
it
to focus
well,
that
she,
focus.
She's from Greenville, and so they at least have high-speed internet. You know, coming from Belton, I have no clue how you do that. It'd take you all day long to listen to a one-hour lecture, you know, letting it buffer out. But, you know, there are some students who are good who can do that. And homeschool students still have to meet standards at the end of the year. They still have to take their tests that are issued by the state. And if they fail, they have to go back to being publicly educated or at least in a structured environment. So, you know, we're holding them to those standards on an annual basis. And I think that's a good way for some students to really have some freedom to do other things that their family would like for them to do.
Absolutely. Now, immigration. That is a big issue,
issue.
And you have some, I will say, interesting ideas on how this should be handled as far as immigration should be. You want to revise the immigration process. What are you talking about?
You know, I had a phone call from a lady who read this online the other day and had some issues with it. My stance on immigration comes from all the years I worked in road construction. You know, we had individuals who were here illegally. I mean, to be quite honest with you, they were illegal could be. The state law, to get bids on certain contracts from the state, you have to have a certain percentage minority own your roles, I guess, as employers. And my employer always loved having me because I counted. You know, I counted as a minority in the eyes of the
Korean
state.
Here, yes. Okay, go ahead.
And so, you know, when we would hire these individuals, they were hired through staffing agencies. The staffing agencies did not have to. They assumed the liability, essentially. And so they weren't being e-verified on most of these jobs. And we were getting,
but as of now, e-verify is something that has to be done. I mean, that may be something in the past, but
right.
Now I would think even the staffing companies could get in trouble if they are the actual hirer of the...
Yes. They can if they get caught. And the problem is that the enforcement level is just not there. One of the first things I mentioned on there is that we need to enforce the laws on the books, and we need to hold these agencies accountable for what they're doing. Because... You know, I did the math on my website, but you know, we had a guy that was making $10 an hour through the
staffing
agency.
This would actually be though, in fairness, you're talking about
right.
immigration, but in fairness,
right.
that is anybody that would be working there, whether
well,
they
is.
Was.
It
was,
is.
Right.
However, if you're not here illegally, you can eventually be hired on full time. You know, these guys are working for staffing agencies for years, sometimes making $4 an hour, working. You know. Heavy labor jobs. And so, you know, it doesn't negate the fact that they're here illegally, but it doesn't also doesn't negate the fact that they're due some amount of rights as far as minimum wage laws go.
But what do you feel about people that are here illegal and are working and everything? Should they be given amnesty? How should this be treated?
I think that the first thing we have to do is secure the borders, because if we send them back to their country, all we're doing is giving them a vacation, and then they just cross back over and come back here and work again. So until we
but will they come back to South? But will they come back to South Carolina is the question.
I think they will, because South Carolina is one of the states. If you talk to anyone who is here illegally, South Carolina is one of the states that it is easier for them to find work here. We don't enforce the laws that we have. The laws that we have are inadequate, and it's easy for them to get by them. There's
so as a senator, what would you do for immigration as far as immigration is concerned? What would be something you would put forth and say, this is what I would like to see happen?
It's not so much legislation that has to be proposed. All it is dealing with the agencies that have the enforcement power and saying you're going to be given the authority to enforce the laws that you're supposed to be enforcing, because right now they're handicapped. They don't have that authority, and when they
do catch someone,
they're just being turned loose.
Well, actually, what I understand, because actually immigration is a federal issue, it is not a state issue. The problem is that they can go out and pick them up all day long, but if there's not a place for if the federal government won't come pick them up, or we don't have a place, some people have suggested we have a massive area to take them, whether it be Atlanta or whatever,
right.
There is no place for them to go because it is a federal government issue.
It is, and there are states who are doing it well. There are states where illegal immigrants avoid, and I think that one of the things that needs to be done is to look
at that Arizona?
Probably now. So we need to just look at those laws and see what they're doing right and what we're doing wrong, because they are coming here because it is easier for them to get work. And as I say on the website, that one thing that I do want to do is work with our federal delegation that's in Washington to really push the reforms that are important to South Carolina as far as illegal immigration goes, because a lot of these issues.
But haven't we passed a law and it's now under scrutiny from our federal government because it is very similar to Arizona.
That's up for the voters to decide how that goes on in November. I think we could go ahead and change that over before I would even be seated as a senator.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's certainly something, you know, that we can all look forward to in November. But you know, there's a lot that our individual delegation can do in Washington to push forward with the reforms that we need as a state to at least make us more inhospitable to illegal immigrants coming here to work, take jobs.
Absolutely. Now, the budget. We have the Budget and Control Board, we have the Board of Administration, and then we have the actual budget. Your feeling on the budget is too much in the budget?
I think that there's too much every year in the budget. This year, I think we're going to incur, depending on how it flushes out during the rest of the week, it's going to be a 12% to 15% increase over last year's budget. And last year's budget.
Well, we have more money. We have more money.
Well, I don't have more money.
Well, they do, because they've taken in more money.
Right.
And of course, one of the issues is we are a state. We are one of the few that actually have a balanced budget amendment. We have to balance our budget.
Right. And we balance the general fund.
Yes.
Which is one of the problems, is that we have pots of money all over Columbia. That aren't
pots of gold all over Columbia.
Pots of gold all over Columbia.
God, I didn't know that. I need to go there more. Yeah.
Well, you know, it isn't yours apparently. It's the government's, even though they took it from you. And you know, there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed as far as how we're collecting this money. I don't understand how, when the House drafts a budget, to when the Senate drafts a budget a few weeks later, all of a sudden we find $232 million extra. It seems like every year they're finding extra money. I mean, not like $100,000 here and there, which $100,000 would still be a lot of money to me, but we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars every year that they're just finding in that two-week process.
Well, some of it, I mean, from my understanding, is that because of when we balance the budget and then from when the next budget comes around, in this case, I do believe that tax revenues have increased.
Right.
Over the sales tax and taxes from businesses and individuals.
And you know, when that happens, I believe that either we pay down debt with that money, which, you know, we are incurring debt, we either pay down debt with that money or we return it to the taxpayers. If we've already created a budget, if the House has already drafted a budget and we've met at government expenditures, there's absolutely no reason we just need to waste the rest of that money off in government, however we're going to waste it off.
Well, what do you think about the fact that budget agencies and everything were cut back during this 2008, 2010, 11 period of time? We've had a lot of people that haven't gotten raises. I think they're talking about 2% for teachers, 3% for state employees, and then 3 or 5% for law enforcement if they're making less than $50,000.
Right.
What do you think, though, about the fact of should we do these things? Should we look at the fact that we've had an austerity program going on and budgets have been cut back? Services have been cut back because of that. and maintain that and look to cut more?
I think that what we need to do is find the waste that's happening in our state budget. I mean, our state, all told, is going to spend probably $23 billion this year. You know, when we have, on a local level, we have superintendents over the education system that are making more money than the governor in Anderson County. You know, all told.
Maybe we should move to Anderson, folks.
move to Anderson, become a superintendent of one of the school districts, and you can make more money than the governor does. And that's coming out of the education pot of money. And that's happening all across the state. And you know, we have agency directors and agency sub-directors of these state agencies that are making six figures a year. Most of the higher-level government employees in Columbia are far exceeding the average income.
So how would you deal with that? How would you deal with that as a one vote in the Senate? How would you handle that?
You know, that's a good point. Yeah, sometimes politicians get carried away talking about their grandiose ideas, but it's reforms that I think need to be pushed. It's reforms that I think need to be brought to the
Such
table.
Such as?
Reforming the way we're spending money, reforming the way that education is being funded. I guess we're not talking about education anymore, but what I've always said is that education needs to be bottom-up funded. We need to fund the classroom first, and if we can't pay five superintendents in Anderson County, then one of them needs to go because, you know, the teachers need to have paper. There's no reason children should be bringing paper and scissors and tape in at the beginning of the year. That's the kind of things that the school should be providing and not relying on the parents to provide. And it's just a whole new approach to spending. As a state, the way that we're funding our agencies, the way the DOT and the way the DHEC and the way LLR are all being funded is we're funding these high-level agency directors and their six-figure salaries and their expense accounts and their cars, and we're funding those first. And then we have the guy that goes out and you know, certifies that an elevator is properly maintained, and he's making pennies. In order to have quality services as a state, we have to fund the bottom levels first and then hire the agency director that cares enough about whatever the agency's doing to take a lower salary. And I think we'll get better services that way. And as a state senator, I'm not promising that that's what's going to happen, but I promise that those are the things that I'm going to fight for.
You'd be real popular down there in Columbia.
No. No, that's okay. Being popular was never a good thing. You know, we talked about my dad, and when he started with this county council thing, I mean, it was good old boy politics up in Anderson County, in small town politics, and they had a tight-knit club that we started, you know, slowly taking out members
sure.
of, and he was not a very popular guy. A lot of people in Anderson County thought he was a no man, you know, they called us cave people is what they called us, citizens against virtually everything. It is the moniker that they came up with to label him and his friends and the people that he worked with in Anderson to really change government. And now, 10 years later, looking back on it, it was a positive thing, I think, for our county
sure.
up there. And
sure.
It's one of those things that I would take to Columbia. One of those lessons I would take to Columbia with me is that you don't have to be popular to be doing what's right.
Absolutely not. We are going to run out of time, though, so let's move on here
but
to
us.
I tell you what, yeah, and I didn't even take one commercial break here with you. Let's see, other things that we want to get to real quick. Actually, we're going to run out of time. One of the things I'm going to ask you real quick, and I'll give you a couple minutes at the end to give us your why you should vote for Riley Harvell here, but the port, what do you think about the port issue?
Well, for those of you who got the paper today, the port was kind of the cover story, the attention grabber that we put on there, because the port, I think, embodies the way the spending mindset that Columbia has. We had $900 million in surplus spending this year that we spent on pet projects of legislators across the state, and the port did not fall into that category. The port was money that the Senate voted to borrow money to dredge the Port of Charleston, a project
if the money does not come in from the federal government. That is a federal issue.
And under my understanding,
mm-hmm.
and I'll preface it with that, based on the conversations I've had with legislators, the money that comes in from the federal government should be matching funds. That $120 million that we have voted to borrow, the federal government will match that should we get the specs done to have that dredging occur in Charleston. And And, you know, we borrowed the money. We're borrowing the money to do it when we couldn't find it in the state budget. And then, like we talked about earlier, that $232 million in extra spending came in after that vote had been taken. And instead of taking a chunk of that and putting it towards the bond that we had voted to take out, they spent all of that money, too. And in order to dredge the port, we're going to have to borrow the money to do it.
Okay. Well, we are almost out of time, Riley, unfortunately.
That's all right.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. I am going to give you 2 minutes now to tell us why people should vote for you on Tuesday.
Sure. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Greenwood's a place where I honestly didn't spend much time growing up. It was kind of down there from Anderson County. But I'm running to represent a chunk of Greenwood County. And you know, all politicians talk about reducing waste and creating quality education and more jobs. And those are all things that I think are very important. But the number one reason why I think that voters down here and voters in Anderson County and Abbeville County should vote for me is that I'm running on principle, and principle that I was raised to believe in. You know, conservative principles, and limited government, personal responsibility and accountability, and returning state government to its true core functions and providing those core functions in a quality fashion for people. It's something that I was raised to believe in, something that I was raised fighting for. I tell people, you know, I was allowed to stay up late on school nights as long as I was stuffing envelopes for a candidate or putting signs together or whatever the case may be. And so I think that if we return our state to those conservative principles, we return our state government to providing only core functions, we're going to see the private sector create jobs, and we're going to see education, the quality of education, go up as we put more attention to the classroom, and we're going to reduce waste in government because the government is only going to be providing those essential core functions that constitutionally they're supposed to be providing. And so I would encourage everyone to get out to the polls on June the 12th and vote for Riley Harvell. That's me, Riley Harvell, because name ID is so important. Because the gentleman I'm running against has been there for 24 years. In the past 24 years, I don't think that we've gone anywhere but down as far as the critical things are concerned. We've seen unemployment go up, spending go up, debt go up. And so, you know, I would encourage people to come out and vote for a change and return a conservative to this Senate seat.
Absolutely. Well, Riley Harvell, I need to thank you for your service to our country. We certainly do appreciate you being here, but I want to personally thank you for serving in the Marines and continuing to serve in the Marines. I understand you're doing your reenlistment papers right now.
I'm working on them. It's a process.
It's a process.
It's an honor and it's a privilege.
Well, we thank you for your service. All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're going to take a short break here, and I'm going to see if I can come back for a happy hour. Woohoo! Don't you go away.